The grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
Boys!
Get a few today, did you?
To be honest with you, I hate grade cricket.
I went into to play for a team called the name escaped me.
Obviously, sharing's always a big issue. A big issue for young kids coming into a senior cricket team.
Tiger was like a withered leaf.
A bit of advice for the player, yeah. Sort of one.
I refer to the great cricketer here, and I'll say this will do a little bit early.
Can anything else go wrong for these blokes? Welcome to the Great Cricketer, brought to you by Budgie Smuggler. Use the code CHAMP at checkout. BudgieSmuggler.com.au, as is your want, as is my want. My name is Ian Higgins. Sam Perry is 2-0 up in these Ashes series. Mate, I just want the English audience, you know, to come with us. If you're listening to it, you got a bit of hate in your heart. You know, you got a bit of hate for your team right now. I think you've just got to come along with us. You have to laugh. Laughter is the only medicine that's going to get us through this, because I'm not even sure that I'm enjoying this necessarily. I don't think England are losing the right way that I want them to. Maybe they are. I don't know. We're going to get into all the things that happened in the Ashes, and also there's India, South Africa. Maybe that'll be a good series. I don't know. India's actually never won a series in South Africa. That's to come. Ali Martin from The Guardian's going to pop in, give us the English perspective. This is quite something we're watching here, mate. You know, these guys are trying. They're doing their best. But even then, they're turning around and kicking the stumps over. This is farce. It's turning into farce. Do something with that.
Do I detect a tonal change from you? And it's a relevant question, Higgos, because yeah. I don't mean that as a gotcha, because I'm experiencing something similar. Like, the boorish stuff, that's fun. Yeah, that's part, sure. It's part of the pantomime.
Sure.
5-0, fuck off, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, mate, Ollie Robinson's bowing off. He's in sunnies. He's playing fours, coming back as a bat.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, England are off. This game was bad.
Really
they're,
bad.
They're offering up endless memeable symbols of mediocrity. That's whether right. It's, I mean, the first test it was Burns' pegs.
Yep.
This test it's Robinson's sunnies, bowing offies.
Yep.
It's Root's testicles. It's Butler kicking them.
Yep.
You know, you advised England on how to manage this. I'm like, oh, they're fine. They know how to manage this stuff far better than us. This is my favourite speak pipe this week.
Omicron needed now. Void the series. Bring the boys home.
Omicron needed now. Void the series.
Omicron needed now.
Bring the boys home.
That's
fucking perfect.
It may well happen.
You know what, mate? This is getting nearly like when Liverpool won the league, the Premier League. There was some null and void chat, mate. This is getting pretty close to null and void. Just that, like, you know what? It is genuinely hard to win tests in Australia, let alone series. There's absolutely no shame in like just being beaten by a team playing at home. That actually applies anywhere in the world, just about. What I can't cop is fucking binning your spinner for a year, trying it for one game on a fucking graveyard, and then he might as well be dead to them now. Not like the captain after the game saying, we need to pitch it up. Mate, you were here 4 years ago. You got fucking 1,150 test wickets and you're setting fields for short pitch bowling.
Mate, he was here 4 years before that as well.
I can't cop Ollie Robinson bowling some spin because the captain is off the field, can't bowl his spin because he's been hitting the nets because he's sweeping balls in the nets without a box. I can't cop Broad and Anderson not playing at the Gabba, bring him in for this. Having a chance at a series, at a win in a test match because Cummins and Hazelwood are out and they're serving up this shit. Josh Butler, the vigil that he puts in, the effort that he puts in, say, innings, what an innings it almost was, and he steps on his stumps. I can't cop all the no balls, the wickets off no balls, the sheer... like how bad the drop catches have been. These aren't aspects of like just being beaten by a better team. These are aspects of I don't know what they're aspects of, but it's see if I call it pathetic, it sounds like, well, you know, it's just an Australian just having a crack at it. No, like if this was the Australian team and I saw this, I'd be like, I wouldn't be able to cop it. Like, mate, what the fuck is, remember, do you remember when James Pattinson bowled offies against South Australia? vividly in a Shield game, and people were fucking, well, he never played again. I mean, he did play again, but like it was, he was called out for being like, this is a disgrace.
Oh, mate, I mean, if Australia was playing like this, business would be through the roof.
Things would be going pretty good, actually. Yeah, damn it.
That's why I'm upset.
Yeah. Omicron needed now.
Omicron needed now. Void the series. Bring the boys home.
You know, the shaky vibrato, honestly, is the best. He's like, mate, it's World War II Churchillian stuff.
Hey, whoever that was, he's fucking right. Bring him home. Because, so to answer your initial question of a tonal change, this team is fucking decimated. And there is just Omicron in the background, and it's the end of a long year of test cricket for that team, and they were, you know, a good shot at winning the T20 World Cup, and then fucking Australia win it somehow. Things aren't looking great. They're talking about lockdowns again all around the world. You know, they've been missing their family. Some of these guys have got young kids, etc. But you can fucking bowl behind the line. You can take a catch. You can not step on your... step on your stumps, I guess that just happens. But, like, it's just another aspect of how village the team is. Mate, Ollie Robinson bowling off, mate. Imagine if Hazelwood just bowled out just four overs of offies at Edgbaston.
We wouldn't have it.
Mate, we wouldn't be able to cop it.
Especially if you wore speed dealers. I mean...
I mean, that was actually saving grace for me.
As I think about it, I actually think... quite like that.
Pretty good, actually. Yeah, I wouldn't mind. To have a look.
Trappings for the eyes. Yeah,
I'll have exactly something new to look at. Yeah. I'll have a look at it.
Maybe that's what Australia needs to do. the part that's tough is when the competition falls over, you lose the competition.
Yeah.
All of the central conceits go with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, on the plus side, they should have a bit of docile stuff coming up in Melbourne and Sydney. They need a little bit of luck. Root needs to go big in the first innings and someone goes with him, and there might be a chance of something. He goes, I was out at Adelaide Oval.
Yeah, you were.
For the test. For the first day or two. Oh, mate, I tipped a couple in. Don't worry about that. Because I know you were worried. I was out there with my dad, and not everyone who listens to this podcast will be listening to the daily reviews, which are on YouTube or patreon.com/greatcricketer for the exclusive audio. And so... just while I'm here, I'm sorry if you have heard this before, but thank you to everyone who came up and offered my dad and I a bag. That was really
welcome.
That was really welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you to Shiloh and Sam, who sorted my dad out members tickets so I could go out.
Members tickets.
Yeah. They did not add. And to everybody else, Patrick, etc., who also offered members tickets, but too late.
too late, sort of.
But
out.
Mate, we were sitting out there. It was a great opportunity to bond with my father and to.
That sounds good.
It was amazing, yeah. Tear rolling down my cheek. and to watch the cricket without being like hammered with media narrative, to be live at the cricket and just watch it like it were a grade game, but everyone's good.
Really good grade game.
Exactly.
Really good. Well, not really good. But.
Grades only, just a couple of... Yeah, well, some of them look like great.
Squint your eyes just enough and I recognise a couple of players, actually. Yeah.
And anyway, for the first hour, just my experience watching it, for the first hour or two, we noted England's tactics of bowling short round the wicket. It was some sort of cosplay body line, but at third grade pace. And watching it live... The batters did look in they had a level of discomfort to it. It had the appearance of being planful and thoughtful. And when Stokes bowls, it's always lively.
Sure.
You know, and it was quite unattractive cricket in the sense that, you know, Warner was 1 off 40. Marnus was scratching around. He essentially scratched around his whole innings.
Yeah.
And it had a very strange rhythm to it because you don't normally see those two blokes. If they bat for an hour or two, I'd say 2 hours, they're normally away. Mm. They didn't really get away at any point. So it made you think, oh, what's this? But actually, as it went on, you just realise, oh, these guys aren't prepared to bowl at the stumps, you know. And Root's saying this after the game, they're not prepared to risk being driven. And
yeah.
You then realise there's a difference between being discomforted as a batsman and actually bowlers employing successful tactics. And what we saw is Australia just kind of build an innings slowly, the bowlers tired, and then comedy runs came later. And I thought that first innings was the most, for me, like from, and you know, X's and O's tactically speaking, actually of all of the cricket that's been played so far, it didn't look dramatically bad in the way that we've talked about the other things, but that was the most demoralising part to me. It was the willingness to abandon risk for reward. It was going, I felt like I was watching a team that was saying, we're afraid of being driven and of the game being taken away from us early. We just want to be in the game. We want to slow the game down. I equated it to parking the bus, if you watch the YouTube dailies. But that's what it felt like. But there was something depressing about abandoning risk straight away. And Australia ended up making 450. They were in the dirt. I was out there on the second day, mate. It was 37 degrees. The beetroot red faces of the England players were there. The hue of their vanilla white shirts against the desert sun. All of those symbols started to build up. And, you know, Australia can make 450 in a first innings at any time. But the way that England went about that, I thought there was some core foundational abandonment that went on there that on the scoreboard, when we look back at the score in a year's time or whatever, Australia made 450. That's it. A couple of guys missed out on a ton. Marnus got one. It was the way they conceded 450 that I thought, you know, this is worrying. And watching it, particularly given the wicket died, like died a death, that the wicket lost its life, the living, breathing thing of a wicket.
Carey was taking everything in his shins and lower.
Yesterday. It was a real reminder that in Australia, when you do get those dead wickets, that's why you need guys smashing the deck at 140 Ks to get something out of it. And that's what Richardson did to change the game yesterday to knock Wokes over. When you're coming in at mid-120s, late-120s, mate, you are pushing shit up a hill deluxe. Especially when you're bowling to a couple of big boys in the top order. And so everything was there at Adelaide. You had the hot desert sun, 120s trundlers, blokes bowling offies in sunnies, you know, guys getting hit in the dick. It was the manner of the concession of victory, though they pushed it all the way, which almost left a ray of light to suggest, oh, if we'd gone about things differently or whatever, we might have saved this game. We go into Melbourne 1-0 down, anything can happen, etc. But instead, it was just a crushing defeat. Australia had to toil on the last day, but in the end, it's 275 runs.
It's really interesting in the context of how they bowled, in the context of all the planning that had gone. We keep hearing about the planning. I mean, they have learnt fuck all in 10 years, let alone like what's gone into this series. I know like so much has changed, but they've known that Archer and Ollie Stone haven't been able to play for a while, and they've known that they've hated their spinner for a year. But the tactic of bowling short is particularly interesting in the context of not playing Broaden Anderson at the Gabba. And so they're basically going to pink ball us. That was a tactic. They've got the best executors of swing bowling in the world, would be their argument, I'm sure. And they're going to play the pink ball test match, and that's where they get back into the series. And then you bowl back of a length and short, and it's all that sort of 120, between 127 and 135 Ks an hour. And I think that's a really interesting point you make about that's why you need guys who bowl 140 plus in Australia, because they, for the most part, they are dropping wickets or they just die in Australia. And I think that's a big difference between Mitchell Marsh and Cameron Green, for instance, because Mitchell Marsh bowls between 132 and he used to bowl 140s, to be fair, but Cameron Green is now going the extra height and he's fucking getting into the deck. And that's why he is more effective.
He's denting that wicket.
He'll be a more effective bowler, I feel like, in Test cricket. Now, Mitch Marsh is, that's not a slight on Mitch Marsh. I think he's a really good player. I think he probably will play another Test at some point, I reckon, Mitch Marsh, in a way series. But again, this is England's problem. First innings runs. I don't know, maybe, no, I think, well, I'm thinking specifically New Zealand, Australia, and India. If you're playing in those countries, probably the West Indies as well, definitely the UAE. If you don't score 400 in the first innings, you cannot win the game. And that's true, I think, for every country, except for maybe South Africa, maybe, but definitely England. England just cannot score more than 300 in the first innings. I mean, they've barely done that. I think they've, of the 13, how many tests they play this year, 14 tests, they've lost 11. The three tests they've won, Joe Root's got double tons in them. So, and that's because they've got big first innings runs. So, you know, it comes down to the last session in this game. And if Root doesn't get out in the last ball of day four, he's coming into bat. He's probably, they're probably a decent chance of saving the game, and then it's 1-0. But I'm now convinced that whatever combination England put together in this, what happens next in Melbourne and Sydney and Hobart, if they make it that far, because of Omicron, I mean, they don't have a combination of players that can beat Australia in Australia in a game, let alone a series. I mean, it's professional sport. Joe Root's fucking, you know, seeing him amazingly.
Parentheses.
Milan's okay. You know, it's pro sport. Things can happen. But Australia, 1-11, and I just about include Root in this. Australia has a better player from 1-11 and probably 1-16 or 17, how big the squad is. So, I mean, if Bairstow comes in,
great.
That's such – Bairstow will probably score more runs than Ollie Pope, especially in Australia. But it's a loss for them because they know that Bairstow doesn't work in Test cricket. Zach Crawley is averaging 11 this year in Test cricket. Okay, he played to play fucking Akshar Patel and shit. But, you know, he's a good player. He was picked because they fancied him for Australian wickets and he's not playing. Mate, it's – I don't – you know, Mark Ward bought a good spell, I guess, in Brisbane. Can Leach play again? Dom Bess is on the tour. He can't play. What's – you know – I'm lost, man.
Stood on his stump. Fucking hell, boys. It's going to be a fucking long winter over here, let me tell you that. Winter. These cunts can't hold a fucking bat to save their lives. Fucking, I've been out here defending these pricks. They're shite. Australia 5-0. It's as simple as that. And you lot are even fucking good. Jesus. These bugs been getting twos.
A bit of Somerset down there, I think.
Is it okay? Let us know.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Australia good or England bad has to be one or the other. I feel like one of the refrains coming through is that, like, oh, this is just a reflection on how bad England are. Australia are middling. You know, are England making Australia look good? They can be wobbly, Australia. I find that question really hard to answer because you can't – what does it mean to be good in Test cricket? Are you comparing yourself to the opposition as it currently stands or are you comparing yourself to former teams? Because when you compare yourselves to oppositions, Australia has a good shout to just be maybe a little bit underneath India.
Yeah.
New Zealand don't have to play everybody everywhere. You know, obviously, World Test champions, etc., and played well in favourable conditions against India.
Yes.
But pumped by us out here, etc. If it's just where Australia in the world rankings or whatever, we're probably just sitting under India. That's about it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So does that make us a good team? You'd think so. Or is it, well, I don't know how that'd go against the 06-07 team. And
Steve was on a gully, so I'm not really sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'd much rather see Channel 7 and Fox Sports engaging in a bipartisan photo shoot of players at first to third slip and gully.
That's right.
You know, not sure JL was a great gripper, but nevertheless.
He was bat pad.
Certain safety. Yeah, it was. You had to fill in somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
To put him somewhere.
But is that a symptom of our own entitlement as well? It's like, listen, I'll accept these guys as a good side or a good cricketing side against once they scale the mountain. I don't know.
I think that same way as batters and to a lesser extent, bowlers, but mostly batters and teams, it's what you do away from home. It can put you into a great – that's why Steve Smith is the best. For what he did in England is just – I mean, he is the difference between that series.
Oh, he's done plenty in India too. Last time we went there, it was three tons
exactly,
four games.
Exactly. Root's still yet – he's done well this series. He's done okay. No hundreds just yet. I'd still back him to put one in the bank. Kohli's obviously got 400s in a series out here as well. He did well. So that's, you know, that elevates you. India winning last two series out in Australia, that's fucking huge. Now, it goes to show you how tough it is to win because New Zealand too pumped India in New Zealand and then beat them obviously in England. But they got fucking walloped out here 2 years, 3 years ago, whatever that was, when they were on their ascension too. Now that doesn't make them a bad team at all. It's just so hard to win series away from home and also just games. Like Pakistan's never won a test out here in their entire history. I mean, they've had some pretty decent teams.
All it just means is in cricket, you don't really know who's good.
Yeah. But this England team is a weak team. I mean, they are crap. They're crap. I mean, people are talking about Stokes. Okay, Stokes averages 35 in Test cricket right with the bat. But people are like, well, actually in the last couple of years, he's averaging 41. Okay, yeah, 41. That's good. Yeah, 41's fine. Can't that 41 can't be your second best bat behind, I mean, and then the rest is just junk. The rest isn't good enough.
It's crap relative to other teams, right? Like, I mean, because it's other teams who make you look crap. Like, it's England are a rich team, and we expect that they win their fair share of games.
See, it's interesting because I don't think there's any necessarily really bad players in the England team. But, man, this is the weird thing.
But what happens when we go there in 2 years' time?
They'll probably win.
Are they crap then? Does that mean, because it's the same
team? I reckon we got a bit unlucky at the toss and we sort of didn't play the right players.
It just goes to show, like, there are so many complex structural things that teams need to work out to, like, you can be a great player or a crap player, it just depends where you're playing.
2019, Anderson goes down with a calf after 3 minutes and Steve Smith has probably the best away series that any player has had probably since Coley in Australia, 400s in 20, whatever the fuck that was. And so, and it's still 2-2 because they just fucking circuit after the last game and Tim Payne wins a toss and has a bowl at the Oval. And then they drop two catches, you know, so.
It's just that players are never, it's, look, with all this shit.
So I don't know who's good.
They're never, exactly. They're never as good or as bad as you're saying. But it really is so contingent upon the conditions of where you're playing. So what we're saying is Australia still pretty good at home. Is that it? Like, is that, who knows?
You look at the history of the Ashes at home, apart from 2010. Actually, that wasn't even a good series. We got fucking spanked. Mm. We lost three games by an innings.
Yeah.
But apart from that, when's there been a good Ashes, home Ashes, like Australian Ashes? All the best cricket is in England because you don't need to score 450 in the first innings. Everyone's in the game every session. Mm. Cricket is just better in England. Series are closer. I don't know. But it seemed like a long time ago when Pat Cummins went down with COVID. Well, he was a close contact. That seems like a long time ago. And then, but Stark and Lyon were outside.
A couple of inquiries.
Were they? Or did they just really need the game to go ahead?
That was a part, you know, that was an interesting part. I mean, I think the media will be combing around for new stories. And then I think the new story with the Ashes will be, what the fuck's Omicron going to do, you know?
Yeah.
And England going to cry off.
Yeah.
I mean,
wouldn't blame him, if I'm honest.
Ben Horn, who always breaks great stories, he was the one who sort of, if you read between the lines of what he wrote, both Premier Stephen Marshall in South Australia and Cricket Australia CEO Nick Hockley were attempting to, I suppose, put responsibility on the other for Pat Cummins' omission. So Hockley said, well, South Australia's rules made it so, and Marshall said, we didn't even get a chance to interview Cummins. And Ben was really clever in the way he wrote his story because to read between the lines, I think, was to conclude Cricket Australia didn't want to put Pat Cummins up for that interview with South Australia.
Did no one get an agenda.
The inference was like, if they interview Pat Cummins, perhaps there are more players
who might go down. Yeah.
Now, that would have been a good game if you had to get a couple of guys from the Adelaide crowd. You know, Theodoropoulos would have been out there.
That's right.
Might have had to bowl some seam arm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Butler might have stood a chance.
It's Luke Palmer's batch knocking about.
Exactly.
He got a game once at the Wacker.
Yeah. So, I think there could be a bit more of that. And I think Cricket Australia is stuck between a rock and a hard place at the moment because in response to Omicron, which is taking all and sundry.
Yes.
And
New sundries recently.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
Like, Hockley has announced what I perceive to be some pretty light evolutions on the biosecurity arrangements. It's like, oh, they have to eat inside, no signing autographs. I didn't think it was anything kind of too massive in terms of impositions on players.
Mm.
And I can only guess that's because England coming out here was preconditioned on them being free. Because they've been bubbled up all fucking year, or at least whichever squads they were in. And so Hockley's like, well, if I restrict you guys, they're going to fuck off.
Mm.
But if I don't, you're going to get it. So I'm just watching the space. I'm like, we already saw what's happened with the media, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a bit going on. There's a bit of it flying around.
I'd suggest that the players actually just requested no more autographs, just from autograph hunters, just... Can you sign my keyboard? What? I don't know if I could sit here right now and be like, this, we'll get all five tests. But we need five tests because this is the second biggest financially, this is the second biggest series for Cricket Australia, which obviously we're on the take for as well. So actually we get paid for
it. Look, the answer's simple as we say, as we talk through this. I mean, in 1995, my parents took me to the SCG to witness Australia A defeat England to make their way into the final of the one-day series.
Yep.
we essentially need Australia knocked out with Omicron, and it needs to be Australia A versus England. Yeah. And then it could get really demoralising for England. Scotty B.
Yeah.
You know, Maddo. Yeah.
Mate, that's
Mate, who is winning that game? You can't say for sure.
I can't say for sure. I can't say. It depends on who wins the toss.
Yeah. Depends on the deck.
That's right. That's right. I was going to say something really funny and insightful.
Oh, well.
I guess we'll never know.
We've got Ali Martin coming in later to give us, you know, the
what I was going
to
say about that. So Kevin Pearson tweeted last night about, you know, just give this England team a break, whilst then also later calling them horrendous in the same tweet. Their batting is horrendous.
Please
give them a break. Just the batting is horrendous.
Yeah.
Whatever he said.
Oh, he has to have meant that. He has to have meant that.
That's fucking levels.
KP levels.
I'm just not. Fatigue has to be a factor. Like, they've been in bubbles, you know, when we spoke to Mickey Arthur, whenever that was, a few months ago, saying, like, the Sri Lankan team has been in actual, like, quarantine lockdowns in hotels for, like, 200 days of the year. Like, something insane. There's no doubt that it's inarguable that England have played more tests than Australia this year, and cricket in general. It's only Wokes that's played everything. Wokes played the World Cup. He went back to Delhi. Butler didn't go back to the IPL. Stokes obviously was off cricket for 6 months.
Mate.
Joe Root's played every test match.
Mate, everyone's coming round for reasons to explain England's ineptitude.
They're just crap.
Is it selections? Is it tactics? Is it too much cricket? I mean, these things would be flipped.
Yeah.
Whatever the case, you know, it's like all of a sudden Australia's entire year off cricket has been good for them.
Exactly.
You know,
but Joe Root's played every game, but he's scored more runs than anyone in history, you know? Like, I mean, Haseeb Ameed wasn't in the IPO, wasn't T20 World Cup. Rory Burns the same. Zach Crawley the same. Dawid Milan didn't go to the IPO, but he was in the T20 World Cup. Anderson Broad, same thing. I mean, they all rotated out of the India series. I mean, the fundamental, their toss selections, who do you, like, the team just isn't good enough. That's what I come back to. It's like, they can put whoever they want in the park. The only player that I can see them elevating the performance of not only the team, but all the players included in whatever the other 10 players would be Archer.
Jeff Boycott. Oh. David Gower.
Ollie Stone's a good bowler, but he's young in his career. I mean, even Archer. I mean, Archer hasn't played that much test cricket. There's pinning a lot of hopes on him, but then it comes back to you can't win out here without a good spinner. I mean, look at the teams that have done well out here. Like South Africa, they had four guys averaging 50. Graham Smith, Amla, De Villiers, Faf du Plessis, JP Duminy.
He goes, you're reeling at England's ineptitude. I mean, there's a part of
it's not satisfying. Like, this isn't satisfying because we just had a conversation about if Australia A were playing, would they beat England? I had to think about it. I mean, the series is...
You're sad.
I am a little bit sad, actually. Mm. At least we're playing. At least the series is on, I suppose.
People should have detected that with the 5-0 fuck-off stuff. It's actually masking, you know, desire and love. You hurt the ones you love.
I had some deep insecurities as
yeah.
well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that's a given for all of us. Yeah. Maybe, especially me. Oh, no, all of us. I'm including myself, so it's okay.
Oh, yeah, no, I can really see it in you.
Okay.
Anything else from the game? Quite a few things, really.
All I've got here is Butler kicking him. No, not really. Milan bowling. Yeah, just there was more of this stuff.
Mm.
Yeah.
Smith shadow batting at 1 a.m. in the hotel.
Yeah, well,
his wife's getting good social cachet from those clips. Getting a lot of airtime. It's because it's not even funny anymore. It's just
like home at 11:30. You know.
I don't care about it being 1 a.m. It's just. I mean, I guess
I thought it was quite sort of European of him, Spanish. You know what I mean? Because he just keeps late hours. I was happy with him.
About to go for dinner.
Oh, Smith strikes me as exactly the kind of guy that'd be in bed at like 8:01. You know what I mean? PM. Yeah, so I was happy to see that.
Yeah.
Hey, I was happy that I was happy to see him captain. I just thought that was good. Yeah, it was nice. It's a full circle thing. He went through some serious undeserved trauma as a result of that.
I agree.
And to have the chance to get himself back into what turned out to be Pat Cummins' blazer. I thought that was nice, and to win,
and to
play well, and to captain well, yeah. Mm. It was a really solid performance in terms of like I get to captain, win toss, bat, a ton would have been good, enforce the follow on, declare twice.
Yeah.
He got to declare twice.
Yeah. Airtime, FaceTime
shit. Yep. Yeah, I've said this before, but I saw somebody tweet that that'd be their idea of a perfect idea for an amusement park.
Yep.
To stand there and declare while 15 extras ran in.
Yeah.
You know?
Bring the boys in.
Bring them in.
I'm a cron now.
Yeah. Let's do another one.
Okay.
For fuck's sake. I fucking hate you Aussie bastards.
Yeah.
It's 2021. Another UK lockdown is impending, and I'm waking up at fucking 6 o'clock in the morning watching Ollie Robinson bowl off break with his fucking sunnies on. Just pack it up, give the 5-0, let's fuck off home. Fuck's sake.
Let's go again.
Yeah, you want another one? Okay, yeah.
Well, boys, I'll keep it short and sweet. Like Joe Root's bollocks, I don't think I'll ever be the same again after this series.
let's finish it off.
What is DOS?
So let's just say that again for the laugh. This is an Aussie.
What is DOS? D-O-S.
Right, okay. Fuck, well, that was just a different question.
That is just one of the greatest fucking old boys at the pub. What is DOS?
Well, hey.
That bloke saw Bradman play.
I think it's a really good question.
What is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, DOS is branding himself so well now. He's got his nickname on his Akubra out there.
Yeah.
I could actually see a poster, a billboard poster, a campaign saying, what is DOS?
There's something about Queensland in the air at the moment.
Yeah.
And Akubra is a great accoutrement to that.
I think the Queensland energy in the side is good for Australian cricket.
Yeah, see Usman Khawaja. Yep. He's obviously Randy Peats through and through, but he's doing the running man down at. I mean, that's how much Australia win the series. 12th man's dancing.
Feel good factor, Nisa, salad stuff. That was good. Yep. That was nice.
Marnus and the team. Yeah. He's doing well. Who else plays?
You know when Manchester United started losing all these games, and every time they lost a game at home, like a new record was broken, or it was a new set of away fans that won for the first time, and they were cock-a-hoop and everything.
Of course.
There's a bit of that in this series. Like, it's, in the absence of, just an arm wrestle between both teams, now it's Nisa gets a cap after the most times being 12th man or something similar to that. Oh, Nathan Lyon's, nearly taking the most wickets at Adelaide Oval in the winter solstice equinox.
Yeah.
Some of it was pink ball. Mitchell Starks overtaking Gillespie. We're starting to have to get into record-breaking stat stuff now. I personally don't find myself overly jazzed by that. I know there is a community that does, and they also enjoy Rubik's Cubes.
Yeah.
But apart from that, that's one of the depressing things about the series. Good luck to all the record breakers and stuff, but it's England about to surpass the most ducks. Like, we're just hearing shit like that, little tidbits. I just want game. I want innings against innings. I want session stuff. I don't want he's just going past fucking.
We want matchups. We want to see players.
Yeah.
Some of the best stuff so far this series has been Joe Root batting, because I want to see players play.
Mm.
I want to see Mark Wood fucking scare Warner.
Mm.
I want to see Stokes do some wild shit.
Yeah. I think
I still want my team to win.
Mm.
But at the moment, we're just seeing guys have a go. And then, when Butler stepped on his stumps, I mean, come on.
One of the underrated things about Butler kicking him is there's a moment just after he kicks him where neither he nor Jai Richardson knows what's going on.
Mm.
The players are starting to swarm and bark around him.
Mm.
And I think he gets a fright and takes off for a run. There's no, he takes off and then turns around because he doesn't know what's going on. He's basically in shock.
Mm.
I just quite enjoyed that.
Yeah, okay. I like that. Appreciate those guys and ladies that have put in visceral minutes over the last 24 hours or so. The Big Bash is a thing that has returned and now comes to life. This is the window that the Big Bash is alive, because it's Christmas. You lose track of the days. You roll in from Boxing Day Test, from the Sydney Test Match Day. You'd be Mr. Blobby.
Yeah,
you're fucking Mr. Blobby there.
Yeah, good 6-inning ground.
and you watch some Big Bash. Now, a couple of English players doing some good things for the Thunder. Saqib Mahmood. 4-9 in his first two overs against the Heat.
Pick him. Pick him.
Close personal friend of the show, Sam Billings, hits 64 off 27.
He's got on to higher honours, Billings, media-wise. So he's all over Channel 7. Once again, another player, like Ali Martin, who's coming in, who's just did a little bit of their academy work here.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Mornay Morkel did that.
Getting in with the big boys. Not getting anything back, you know, message wise. A couple of grey bombers there.
Yeah, must be nice.
Mm, must be really nice.
Other big bash news, Aaron Finch is going to be back for the Renegades. Nice to see the T20i World Cup winning captain. He won't be captain, though, because.
Matto,
who will soon, you know.
And then Richo took over from Matto.
Really?
Because Matto was in Australia, eh?
Of course. So he's back. The Scorchers are going to play all their games away from home, Pez, because of the Western Australia border thing. I mean, it was pretty amazing that it got as close as it did for Western Australia before Perth lost their test match because, I mean, they were going to open their borders on Feb 5. I don't know if that's going to happen anymore with Omicron. I would have thought no chance. Mitch Marsh hit a ton versus the Hurricanes. Josh Philippe, 99, not out, versus Glenn Maxwell's 103 in a losing side. Satisfying. That's also a thing that happened. And Tom Curran is heading back to the UK after the hotspot back injury. That's kind of the roundup. The Sixers are leading the table at the moment. They played one more game than the Scorchies, and they're a 1 point more. The Sixers are leading the comp, but that'll change in the next 15 minutes by the time you listen to this.
A great roundup.
That's what's happening in the Big Bash. All right. The next big thing that's happening in cricket and for TJC is the India-South Africa tour. Now, Pez, this is where Patreon really kicks off if you just listen to TJC because we're doing dailies for all the Ashes, the days play for the Ashes test match and also for South Africa-India after every day's play. We're doing a review. We also get hashtag AskTJC Fridays. This episode 70 has already been recorded. That's coming out on Christmas Eve this week. Here's what we spoke about on last week's hashtag AskTJC Fridays. Here we go, Pez. Hashtag AskTJC Fridays, episode 69.
She's out there trying to get some gold. Yeah. 6.5 hours east of Perth. having a circuit.
Mate, I've got to tell you.
It's a young buck. Mate. Goes, hey, come around, have some mushrooms later on, and we'll watch Coley and Co. While I offer to give you head.
And some mushy peas.
And now starting to sound like a fantasy.
Yes, we were covering a young buck who had met a lady on the circuit in like middle of Western Australia, some 6.5 hours east of Perth. He met her, and then she invited her around for some mushrooms whilst having sex and watching the India-England series. Is that what we're talking about there? That story was about?
It was an older woman.
That's right, so yeah.
It was an older woman.
Older being she was 26 and he was 20.
Well, yeah, I guess as a percentage of his life, what's that?
25%.
20%. And he related it to club cricket insofar as when he was 12 or 13, some, you know, crusty old bloke
said,
you know, you want to have sex with somebody older than you because they'll, you know, show you the time of your life and how to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he managed to kind of go all the way. And as he went round to her place to do magic mushrooms, he then learnt that she was really into cricket.
Yeah.
And so a lot of this stuff was happening with the cricket on.
That's right.
Anyway, that kind of gear is what you're getting. And some wonderful cricket analysis. Anyone who follows Patreon will tell you. It's where the real X's and O's happen.
Okay, so the South Africa tour, India's tour of South Africa starts, they're already there, but starts on Boxing Day as well. The first test is at Supersport Park in Centurion. The third test is in Cape Town, which means the second test is in Joburg.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's happened now. India, as I said earlier, have never won a test series in South Africa. Jadeja's he's out of the tour. He ain't playing. So the balance of the Indian team is interesting. Agarwal is apparently set to definitely open because he did really well against New Zealand in that series after the World Cup, the T20 World Cup. So now it's down to Shreyas Iyer, batting middle order, or Vihari. Vihari sort of got the runs on the board, if you will. Shreyas Iyer scored 100 against New Zealand B, is what the chat is. A bit harsh, but it was also 100 on debut. So that's the conversation at the moment. But this could be a good series. This is another frontier for India to cross. South Africa at home, tough to win.
I'm sorry if you just said this. He goes, it's set to be played behind closed doors as well.
I did not know that. Yeah, no, I didn't say
just
that.
Just got that Firdaus Munda's reporting that set to be behind closed doors. So the Indians will avoid the wrath of South African fans. and that's interesting that Agarwal's opening, mate. I would have thought KL Rahul would have opened with him, but is he injured or something like that?
No, I think KL Rahul will open, but I don't think...
Sharma.
I think... That's a good point. I was going to say Schumann, because Schumann played in the New Zealand series.
Mm.
This is why you do your research. I'm sure no one's going to let me know in the comments.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. Look, it all happens against the backdrop, and we talked about this last week, of the just brilliant palace intrigue between Kohli and the BCCI board. You know, Kohli has essentially contradicted official communiques from Sourav Ganguly, Dada, I should say, yes, and the BCCR, Jay Shah, etc. And that's a fucking heavyweight battle administratively.
Yeah.
Coley v BCCI. I don't know who you got there. Bit of like what? Yeah. Who you got there?
Who you got?
Yeah. Like I noticed that there's a bit of a criticism of Coley as being a bit woke. Like
Coley. Yeah. But sort of via his wife, which feels a bit toxic.
Yeah.
Because it's like it's not necessarily that he wasn't woke before, but then he met this woman who then changed him. That's the insinuation that I'm seeing on the internet.
And Coley's rabid attack dog, aggressive man, like takes the game to the opposition. The idea that like he is a snowflake.
But isn't this just? It's almost like he's a different person on and off the field. And I play with plenty of those.
No.
Yeah. And he's lovely if he's on your team.
All
he's
one
a good bloke.
Persona.
Yeah. Except for Ashwin.
Do you see, given the sort of removal of leadership responsibilities from Coley away, test matches aside,
yeah,
do you see runs coming for him? I mean, that's got to be one of the things, doesn't it? Like, that's got to be one of the underpinning.
I think that we have seen the best of Coley and Steve Smith. I think we've seen the best parts of their career already.
Mm.
So I don't think we'll see the bulk runs that we've seen in the past. I still think there are runs for them to be had. But I think there's a newer wave coming through. I think Kane Williamson appears and he just plays less tests. Mm. I think Marnus is up and coming, but all his runs are in Australia so far. So, you know, the jury's out there. I saw Wazzy Makram actually praising Bubba Azami, saying this is Bubba. The 21st century will belong to Bubba Azam. Big call. I mean, Bubba's 24 or is he 27? Let me know.
Mm.
It's one of those two. Quite a big gap. But I think there's a new generation coming. Now, Joe Root's in his prime. This is Joe Root's best. He will never do this again, Joe Root. So he's in his prime right now. Marnus is coming into his prime still a little bit, but again, runs at home. My point being, Coley and Smith, we've already seen the best of them. I don't know about Virat. He hasn't scored 100 in it's more than a year now.
He's going to need to. Mate, you're right. I'm just looking this up. It looks like Agarwal's going to play. It's no Sharma for the series. He's in with, it looks like, KL Rahul. A lot of talk about Vihari. Batting three, batting. So no Pujara. And Virat will be four. Then they're talking about Shreyas Iyer at five, Punt at six. It's a very...
So no Rahane.
That's right. And that's a far less experienced batting lineup than they've had before. I wouldn't be surprised if they still scored bulk runs, but it's a bit... Coley's the real dad of this lineup now.
That's right.
And he is a recent father, so is there some dad-dick runs coming?
I think those wickets
are good for Coley. By the way,
do you reckon?
Yeah,
mate, Nokia Rabada, pretty good.
I'm back.
No spinner though.
I'm back in Virat.
Yeah, safe bet there. To be fair,
interesting.
Mate.
And South Africa, I guess I can play.
I got some guys. Sean Pollock still play for them? That's so disrespectful. Hey, Ali Martin is coming in to the studio to talk to us about the Ashes in England and what the fuck is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to do some ads first?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, give it to me.
Budgie Smuggler, he goes, we'll kick off with them. Number one, friends of the show. Look, let's face it, it's too late to order something for Christmas. It ain't going to get to you, okay?
Yeah, but if you're trying to order it now, you're a fucking idiot.
But it doesn't mean the product line is any less quality.
Have you seen their ads?
Oh, they've got ads running through KL and stuff like that.
Yeah. They're really good. They're good. Funny.
Yeah, they are funny. Yeah.
Do you remember like back in the day when like you used to love an ad? Like you used to have like really funny ads.
Totally.
And then they played during the cricket and they were on every over and you're like, it's slightly less funny. Then it gets funny again.
I remember
for irony purposes.
Went to the US, like their ads are so much funnier.
Mate, do you remember the Sports Center ads?
Yeah, Sports, high production,
sensational.
Funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
You come back here and it's just fucking somebody yelling at you.
Yeah.
You know?
What are the odds?
What are the odds? Yeah. Gifts for blokes,
just
men's.
Fuck my face with odds. Can't escape it.
Men's swimwear, $60. Quality, made in Australia. Comfort. Comfort is what you're looking for. Comfort for that rig. Whatever the rig looks like. There's no shame. There's no style. There's no shame with Budgie Smuggler when it comes to rig. They actually celebrate ordinary rigs if that's you.
That actually
was
certainly a
competition. Me. Yeah. They run that competition every year.
Mm.
And it regardless of the state of your rig.
Mm.
And your setup, the state of your setup, the state of your rig, you're going to get comfort in that swimwear, men and women. Prince Deluxe. You want a print? They've probably got it. And if they don't have the Ashwell that you want, you can design it. Custom design, baby. That's some flexibility. Guess what? That's all made in Australia. They don't have to make it in Australia.
That's some great gear.
They don't have to.
They'd actually turn a lot more
profit. You reckon
they
the didn't. Margins? What do you reckon about the margins? Mm. Yeah, no. Proudly made in Australia. That's supporting local shit right there.
Yeah.
You heard Linny a few weeks ago. You no doubt did. He was like, they sell a pair every 2 minutes. He wants to go every 1 minute. You want to help a thriving Australian entrepreneur?
Yeah.
He's not asking for it. I'm saying it on behalf of him.
Quite aggressively.
Your best friends do your PR for you. There's a little tip. While I'm looking down the corner of the room there. Underwear $30, Australian made again, organic cotton quality, new search $50. You know, women, all the same. Swimwear, apparel. They've got booty shorts. I don't know what that is. I've got a hyperlink to it. Booty shorts. I just say to my wife, would you like some booty shorts? Slap in the face. No, Sam. Flamingo booty shorts, leopard booty shorts, that kind of gear. They got all of that. Non-clothes, towels, bucket hats, socks. $2 only. Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal. Wait, that's King Kong sales. Sorry, Linny. But they do have towels and bucket hats and socks. It's just it's sand resistant, super bright. Budgiesmuggler.com. And then let's get into Watto.
All right, let's do T20 stars.
Yeah, T20 stars before we go to Ali. Welcome. Okay. One thing about this test match, he goes, that stood out to me was the fucking safety and size of Steve Smith's mitts. They are absolute buckets. Now, guess who else has mitts that have been all over his gear? Watto and his T20 Stars gear. His mitts are all over it, literally and figuratively.
You know that
mainly figuratively.
That's that catch that Steve Smith took last night off Ollie Robinson off Lyon, right towards the end. He caught that in his fingers, and like that's when you can see the size of the fingers.
Normal size hands, small hands, you ain't pouching that.
He averages 27 in Test cricket.
You know the mitts are good when the ball, you don't catch it, you swallow it.
It's like a spider.
The ball disappears inside the mitt.
Yeah. It's like a Venus flytrap.
A fucking Venus flytrap. Now,
that's what I thought. As soon as I saw that, it's a Venus flytrap.
He's we're doing this mitts. Ad because we want Watto's business to be a Venus flytrap for your money. No. I mean, I'm just saying, I just said Linny's an entrepreneur, so is Shane Watson.
This
kid is good. And I actually want to ask anyone who has sampled the kit, write in your experience. We'd love to know what you think. Because
we've had
the bats. I've used the bat against Peter Hatzoglou. He's taken a few wickets. Obviously, he didn't sort of get my pole. But
That we saw on footage.
He didn't get my pole.
He only bought 3 balls and that was,
Okay.
He didn't get my pole.
That's whatever, he didn't get my pole. And
well, people have seen the bat review. We enjoyed it.
It's a thick boy.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you need, especially in terms of male bravado around thickness, mitt stuff, size, levers, T20 stars.
Attaching yourself to good players in the past glory. Shane Watson, one of Australia's best ever.
Please. All TGC listeners are getting 10% off all bats, balls, gloves, and pads.
Yep.
Use the code TGC10.
TGC10.
At t20stars.com.
Here he is, from The Guardian and from our hearts, Ali Martin. Hados.
It's the Gabba. Hados. It's the Gabba. Hados. It's the Gabba. There's nerves. Every man and his dog has a fundamentalist opinion about what to do on a wicket that does literally everything. High humidity. Hados. Hados. High humidity. Hados. Hados. High humidity. Hados. Bump him out. Bump him out. Bump him out. Into submission. Hados. Into submission. Bump him out. Into humidity. Bump him out. Into Hados. Hados. Bump him out. Into submission. High humidity. Hados. If you think about it, you know, and then if you think about it, and then bump him. Hados. If you think about Hados. If you think about Hados. Bump him out. Into submission. High humidity. Hados.
Okay, we're joined by a man that we've spoken to many times down the Zoom line, but he's here now in the flesh. We can feel it, we can see it, we can touch it. It's real. And I don't think he liked that I just did that.
No.
He didn't. It's the chief correspondent for cricket for The Guardian, Ali Martin. Ali, welcome to TGC Towers.
Thanks for having me. It's like I've walked into my own YouTube app.
Well, welcome to Australia. Welcome to Melbourne, where we are. You know, there's only one thing Australians love more. No, sorry, I was just saying that.
5-0. Let's talk about this. Yeah.
I mean, people out there listening will just want to know from an English perspective. You're out here. Your face looks tanned. You know, you're looking more Australian. But you know, are you feeling the oppression and the abuse of the general populace and our diaspora since you arrived?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. It's like it does. It sort of bores into your brain a little bit. It's kind of. There's two levels. So you've got the kind of the background noise, and then you've got the absolute overt. You know. Like for example, I bumped into a former Australian cricketer. I won't name him, but I bumped into him the other night, and he's a guy that I don't really know, albeit I had a night out with him a couple of years ago in Birmingham. Mm. And he said, "All right, mate, good to see you." Second thing about him was, "How shit are England?" Thanks, man. Yeah.
To that point, I wonder, I said to Pez this morning, I want to test this with you. Would the England cricketers be, obviously any cricketer goes to India, is that they're the most famous in India.
Mm.
Would this England team be next most famous in Australia? Are they more famous here than they are in England?
Ooh, that is a good question. Well, they're on free-to-air television, which does make a big
difference. That helps, Yeah. But I guess my point being that, like, they're so recognisable, but when they come here in Australia, they just get abused. Now, I know that, like, we've heard all the niceties from Broad and Anderson, especially so far, especially they were in quarantine, but then even when they went to Adelaide, they were saying, like, everyone's actually been really nice. The history of their experience in Australia suggests that's not necessarily true unless COVID has changed us all and we're actually just nicer people generally. Mm. That was a side effect of the Pfizer vaccine, which I'm not really too sure about.
Wow.
But you know, they'd be so famous, they're just getting hammered. I think this is part of the the English experience touring Australia.
Mm.
Is that they're very recognisable here and people sort of hate them, but they don't hate them, but they say mean things to them even when they go to dinner.
I think so, yeah. Although I guess this is a slightly weird tour, isn't it? Because they're obviously, you know, they're hunkered down. They've got their pods in the bubbles that they have to operate in, smaller groups. I think now they've moved to to what are meant to be the sensible states. They're kind of, you know, now even it's even stricter. And I think they can only go out in groups of three and they can't meet up with the people on the outside as well. So then maybe there's a little sort of slight buffer there that's kind of protecting them a little bit. But yeah, you do well to miss it, right?
Yeah.
How many tours have you done of Australia as a cricket coro?
This is my second.
Right.
So I was here in 17-18 for the 4-0, probably one of the most forgettable series I've ever seen.
I remember.
But that...
What?
Yeah. And then I first came here in 2002-03 as a punter. So I was a paying punter, a sort of backpacker, staying, you know, travelling around. Didn't get to Perth, but I did the other four tests, stayed here in Melbourne in St Kilda, had an absolutely, you know, best time of my life. And actually, it probably sort of made me think this is what I quite like to do for a living.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it Barmy Army?
I knew nothing of deadline stress at that point.
So. were you with the army?
It was slightly more of a nebulous. It did exist back then, but it's a slightly more nebulous thing. I wasn't affiliated. You know, I wasn't assigned.
Didn't have all the merchant accoutrements.
No, I had a T-shirt that my brother had bought me, and that went missing on the second day on the hill in Adelaide.
Right. Yeah.
Not because I took it off and was shirtless, but just I can't remember what happened. Yeah. Anyway, I think someone pinched it. But yeah, you could just, if you wanted to, you know, have a few beers and move towards the guys that were making a bit of noise, that was quite nice. You could sort of swing around that way. But that's the beauty of the Australian grounds, is that you're not just on a dedicated seat. You know, you can have whatever day you want to have, basically.
Can I ask, as a punter, like, is there, if you were travelling overseas to watch the England cricket team, like, is there any kind of obligation to gravitate towards the Barmy Army, or is there like a more of a hipster sect that'd be like, look, you know, might have a beer with one or two if I know them, but not really getting involved in, you know, please don't take me home for the 18th time.
Yeah, do you know what? I reckon there'd be more of an aversion these days. It was a bit more, it felt a bit more gentle back then, a bit more gentle and a bit more jolly and a bit more support the lads. Do you know what? I've got a theory about the Ashes, and it's probably complete nonsense, but I reckon 2005 sort of changed the dynamic a bit because, you know, we'd had, what was it, 17 years of getting flogged all the time. As a punter back here in 2002-03, I was out here thinking, this is, you know, this is the absolute time of my life, you know. Yeah. And I don't expect England to win. I expect them to get smashed. I am watching one of the best teams that's ever played the sport. So I was just here to appreciate that. And you're just hoping that one or two guys stand up. And in that instance, it was Michael Vaughan in that series.
That's interesting.
I reckon expectations have shifted and probably people have hardened up and it's got a bit more binary in the way it's seen.
Ali, I sense that there's a real sadness with like the experience of English people experiencing this series.
Sorry.
Yeah.
English sadness. Do something with that.
You've noticed that. Yeah.
No, but like I'm having this inner torment where I don't even know if it's funny anymore. Like I feel like I'm punching down because it's getting so bad. Like it's getting farcical, seriously.
Ollie Robinson bowling off spin and shade.
And the thing was, missed that actually.
It wasn't even a bad spell of bowling. It wasn't the bowling itself. Anyway.
No.
What's your experience of watching this England team at the end of this year of what was supposed to be like a potentially great year. And it's actually only been a great year for one player so far.
Yeah, and it's weird because basically Chris Silverwood joined 2019, which was after that, you know, that famous summer in England.
Right.
And particularly as head coach, but also a lot of the players are bought into it as well. We've had 2 years of Ashes chat. And it's normally I think the media gets kind of hit with this stick of, you know, you guys are obsessed with the Ashes, but it's flipped around in the last couple of years, I'd say. I'd say that they've been talking it up as a project. They've justified rotation, they've justified various selections.
Yeah.
Everything with the eyes on the big prize and say, to come out here, lose the first two in, you know, and not really compete is pretty shambolic and pretty depressing.
Yeah.
The other thing I've noticed, I mean, I came out here and I kind of thought, you know, the Australian hubris was probably at its peak 4 years ago, right? And obviously things have happened since and, you know, probably the world's changed a little bit for Australian cricket. But I kind of thought that after a year's starvation of Test cricket that there'd be probably a bit more celebration of the fact that just the game is on, you know, that they came out. I don't necessarily think England were ever not going to come, but you know, this is a series that involves quite a big personal commitment from a lot of them to get out here.
Yeah.
And I just, with the cricket on and with that year absence over here of Test cricket, I thought there'd be a bit more celebration, but it seems like no one's wasted much time just wanting to get stuck.
It's a reflex, I think. You're right. I don't know what would happen if it was someone else, but if it was any other country. But I just think we're just seeing the things in the rhythms that we like to see them, and we just reflex to, you know, reveling in the farce.
Yeah, well, because we had this a couple of summers ago, and a more extreme example, but when the West Indies came over in the absolute height of the pandemic, there were no vaccines, it was the most stringent.
They won the first test, didn't they,
They won the first test, and it was just a celebration. It was just the fact that here is the game. You know, here is the sport that we love.
The West Indies took a pay cut as well, didn't they?
50% pay cut, yeah. So it was, England didn't make them, by the way. That was
No, sorry. Getting into some Tony Greg Grovel areas. No.
And that is an Aussie England thing, though. I mean, we say that about grade cricket. You know, I think there's a general celebration of cricket at sort of club level in England across the board. And in Australia, it's not. It's just alphas and chests ego.
I think Ali makes a great point. Like 4 years ago, there was at the SCG, the 4-0 sign.
Yeah.
And then like 6 months later, sandpaper. I mean, who could have seen this coming?
That's right.
You know, the hubris of it. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what? I remember because the press conferences are down in the sort of basement of the SCG. Mm. And as we're walking down, I think it was like day four, because every test went 5 days. I suddenly spotted these massive hands. But it was all the combinations, right? So there was like a three, a four, a one.
Oh, right.
And even English, there was even English hands with fingers up. So they were clearly
fucking
covering.
Hell, that is bizarre.
Yeah. Actually, I think there was only the one by that stage. But it was the one and the zero, right? Yeah. But
I mean, 4-1 would have looked completely bizarre on that podium. Really bizarre.
Yeah. Just on the England side, like maybe this boils it down too simply and it's an oversimplification, but in terms of trying to understand or pass what is happening to the England side in this series, it seems to me that you can either go down the path of saying that there's a broad systemic issue where the country, because of its conditions or various other things, maybe the 100 or whatever it is, structurally can't produce players to compete out here across the board, batting, bowling, fielding, or that there are deck chairs on the Titanic that haven't been arranged properly on this tour, and that were the chairs moved, that we may see something that hasn't gone as it seems to be beyond fast. Do you sit in any of those camps? Because you must sit in one.
Okay, no, well, no, because I mean, it's the double whammy. This series is the double whammy on that front, in that there is a product of massive overthink in terms of selection, in terms of tactics and strategy. But also, you know, I mean, I've heard you say it, but it was 4 years ago I first heard the phrase from Crash Craddock, who's one of the great men in the Australian press box, is, if you haven't got the cattle, you haven't got the cattle.
Right? Oh, right.
So, yeah. Don't worry, it wasn't something else. Yeah, no, what the hell did I say? Yeah. I'd say it's the double whammy in this instance.
Where do you think it will go then? I mean, do you think that, what do England need to do to improve or fix things in the short term for this tour, do you think? And what do you think they need to amend long term, if they amend anything at all, to better compete out here?
Yeah. How many parts is this podcast?
Yeah, exactly. Just sum that up there, please.
Well, I mean, they're going to have to rejig selection, I think, for MCG.
Are you hearing anything? Because I think you're close to the team.
Yeah, Mark Wood's going to. I think Mark Wood will definitely come back in. And
he's really well rested.
Yeah, really well rested. He should be good to go, right? And to be honest, I mean, I was one of the people that was pretty incensed. I probably wish I'd made more of it on the day, actually. But in terms of when he was left out of the Adelaide Oval, I just thought, when they're talking about next week, you just think to yourself, for goodness sake, if England lose this test match, there is no next week.
Yeah.
You know, because no team has ever come back from 2-0 down in an away Ashes series. It just doesn't happen. Yeah. So you didn't know that.
I didn't know that, no. Okay. No. I just focused on the 5-0s.
That's made you feel even better, right?
Yeah, I feel very good, yeah. Okay. Christmas has come early, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd probably expect Ollie Pope to take a blow. It was a kind of borderline choice between him and Johnny Bairstow before the series. And in fact, Johnny would have played in the Old Trafford test ahead of Pope.
Yeah.
Before that was called off.
Yeah.
I didn't want to throw them under the bus then. Before what happened.
Yeah. Before whatever the insurance issue was and whoever says what.
Yeah. Yeah. And it wasn't COVID related.
Yeah. No,
it was right. A mental health. Anyway.
The IPL started the next day, but yeah.
You said that.
Still testing.
So I'd expect a switch there, whether that involves Bairstow coming back in, whether he's the next you think logically he'd be the next guy to come back in. The way Joss battered on that final day in Adelaide, you'd wonder whether they might, and the way he kept, which was a bizarre performance behind.
Yeah. It was.
I mean, taking worldies and dropping absolute goobers. So you kind of...
He really went to the extremes in that game across all disciplines, really. He took hangers, he dropped sitters, he was worked out, really clearly by Stark in the first innings, and then he nearly saves the game. I mean, you could stare through his eyes into his soul by the end.
Yeah. He's got lovely eyes, hasn't he?
Very nice eyes.
But whether they would say to Butler, well, you know, you've had some time out in the middle there, just focus on your batting. We're going to give the gloves back to Johnny here, bat him at 7. I don't know. I mean,
all right.
That's just a theory. Right. But that would be full circle on the whole psychodrama of those two. You know, how to get those two in the same team anyway. So, we'd almost be back to square one on that, and you'd sort of think, what the hell we've been doing for the last 2 years? But you're thinking that anyway, generally.
Yeah.
I suspect they're probably going to be thinking about the top of the order as well, and whether that involves Zach Crawley coming in. The bloke's only averaging 11 in Test cricket this year, but that's in part due to his experience in India, which was just extreme. He was completely, you know, he wasn't the only one completely like a fish up a tree or whatever. Yeah. So that's not the phrase.
Oh, Akshar Patel, though, I mean... Like if he just plays in India, he'll just get 700 wickets at 10.
Yeah. That was Crocodile Dundee fishing with dynamite, right?
So anyway,
not to disparage what he did. He had a great series.
Or Crocodile Dundee.
I don't want you to lose your Indian sponsors on the YouTube channel.
Ah, fine. They're good.
Okay. So they'd be the changes. But I mean, fundamentally, it's about the basics, and it's about that front line. It's about the catches. It's about the outfielding. And those are, I mean, they're the kind of non-negotiables, right? You can say the guys aren't good enough. You can look down the averages and say, hang on a minute, how the hell is David Milan topping the averages with the bat and ball? But essentially, you know, even if you've got a sort of slightly shallow talent pool and you're kind of scratching your heads a bit there, you can do the basics right. These are professional cricketers. And so they've got to get that right in between now and Boxing Day.
I feel like the Bairstow one's an interesting one. We were just saying this before in the first segment, but... I feel like Bairstow might be actually a defeat. I think he'll probably score runs in Australia. He's obviously got a test 100 at the Wacker, I think he was, wasn't he? He was same as Milan.
Yep.
He'll probably score runs in Ollie Pope, but they want Ollie Pope more because he seems to have a higher ceiling, more of a future, because they've seen what Bairstow does in test cricket. He already played 60 or 70 tests, hasn't he, Johnny Bairstow, and he averages 30, whatever, 32 or something. So whilst he might score more runs on this tour, he probably hasn't got the test career left in him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so they have got a short-term, long-term balance there, but I think they've got to go short-term at the moment because there are jobs on the line here. When Chris Orford took over as the chief selector and Ed Smith left, and they added that job to his head coach title, to his head coach role, Ashley Giles, director of cricket, said, you know, if we lose an in, he said his head's on the block, which is quite, you know, quite an extreme thing to say when you're giving someone a promotion. Like it,
yeah. Yeah,
here's a promotion, but your head's on the block.
Your head's on the block, man.
Yeah, yeah. And, but he said, if we lose in Australia, you know, questions are going to be asked, not just of him, but of all of us. So I think they've probably got to go short term. And also with Ollie Pope, I mean, it looks good, doesn't it? Like it's everything's there in terms of the way he plays.
I thought he looked really good in Brisbane. Yeah, I thought he batted well in Brisbane and he got out. Yeah.
Yeah, but as good as it looks in terms of the technique, something's not right there. He's struggling with, I don't know whether it's the intensity. I mean, he's certainly struggling with Nathan Lyon, which, you know, I think for an English cricketer, you know, back in the day, you come up against a guy like Shane Warne and you'd say, well, you just don't face that in Cancer cricket. Probably he's playing for Hampshire. But, you know, we just don't face that in Cancer cricket. To be that all at sea against a right arm off spinner for an English batsman, a short, compact, squat, you know, seemingly technically correct, to be like a cat on a hot tin roof, that is, alarm bells are ringing there. So I would have thought he'd be whipped out of the firing line.
Yeah. So 2-0 down, it's beyond farce. Deck chair rearrangement going on.
Sunny at least.
You think that short term approach is what England will do because jobs are on the line. I mean, who are the likely heads to roll? I mean, I know you said Silverwood's on the chopping block.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard the phrase, you know, that this series could be a captain killer for Root.
Mm.
Is that legit? You know, do you think that could happen? I mean, obviously, as the wins amass, if it does get to 3, 4, 5, it just looks very bad, and you'd imagine there's a lot of demoralising moments within that.
Mm-hmm.
But does change at leadership necessarily help?
You mean mid series or with, you know, at the end of the series?
Okay, I suppose what I'm asking is, can you see any mid series change?
No, I can't see mid-series change. I think particularly the way the series is structured is so compact. There isn't much time to think. Mm. Longer term, it's gonna be probably down to some of the internal politics and dynamics, whether they are kind of sticking together. Because, you know, there's not like there's a stalking horse in the team.
Exactly.
There's only probably three or four guys that you would say are locked into their positions.
Mm-hmm.
One of them's David Malan. He's 34. This is very much his sort of, you know, last stab at Test cricket. And he's shaping up well.
Mm.
The next in line would probably be Ben Stokes, and then that in of itself presents the issue that English cricket's always had with its champion all-rounders, Ian Botham, Andrew Flintoff, Ben Stokes. You know, do you saddle them, given that they've got two disciplines to work on, and also
three formats,
plus IPL,
it's tricky,
captain as well,
but I mean, it was interesting also to note that Joe Root's talking about the bowlers not pitching it up, and then the one point in the test match when they did pitch up was when he was off the field with his plums in ice and Ben Stokes was actually leading the team. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, those two are so close that, as I say, I don't think he's a stalking horse in that respect. I don't think there'll be any sort of internal capital being sort of, I don't even know what the phrase is. I'm tired.
You have to excuse my naivete about England's schedule next year, but what's next after the Ashes? Have they got a bit of a break or do they play 7 tests somewhere in March?
Well, 3, but yeah. So they will get back from this, I think, the day after the SCG test. No, sorry, not SCG, I'm in the old structure. The day after the Hobart test, the one-day team starts a 5-match T20 series in the Caribbean.
Okay.
There's a few weeks off in between there. I mean, that'll be a bunch of reserves, right? So it's not... It won't have the test players in it.
Right.
But there is a 3-test tour of the Caribbean in March, which is the entirety of March. That then knocks into the IPL, which goes through till... June, then it's a 3-test series against
South Africa.
It's New Zealand first, 3-test against them. I know you do.
Oh, yeah. Are they still playing test cricket?
Yeah.
New Zealand.
New Zealand. Okay.
What?
Wow. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Surprising.
Yeah. So they got the world champions, they got South Africa. And then it's another epic winter where I think they've got five countries, six tours or something like that. So.
Wow, because the T20 World Cup's out here.
World Cup,
yeah. Obviously, including the World Cup. So it is relentless. And. It kind of taps into a bigger issue of cricket as to how much in how much they're playing. And when they start resting and rotating, broadcasters start losing interest or the money goes down. Is that part of the death spiral?
Wow.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
These are big. That's easy answers. Dancing Monkeys. Get them out there playing at all costs and times. Do you, simple content. Yeah. Do you, like me, feel like the end of this Ashes series is the end of a cycle in a way and that, that it all starts anew, or are we just on the carousel?
Yeah. It'll be interesting. That Caribbean tour in March is interesting. Whether, you know, whether that is a kind of, can you make a change in between the two tours? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, because there's no sort of domestic cricket in between that time. How do you even pick a squad for that series other than on a hunch, right? So, I mean, you obviously might bin off a few people that can completely failed, or maybe some views will be taken. But that's
it's a good phrase, bin off.
Yeah. You can't just not select them in the bin.
That's right.
Bin off.
Bin you off,
I've been here too long.
Yeah. Everything's aggressive. Yeah. It's good.
Yeah, so I don't. What was the question?
Does it feel like a new cycle? You know, well, like, I feel like this is the end of something this summer, and then everything commences anew.
Yeah, English cricket, I mean, always works in Ashes cycles, whether that's right or wrong, you know, given that we're watching third versus fourth. I mean, you know, you'd think the World Test Championship would become the new natural cycle, but I think for English cricket, it will take a long time to get the Ashes out of its system. Or, I don't think it'll even try, because I think that will just carry on in perpetuity.
Because the World Test Championship in England are gone from that already, aren't they, basically? I mean, they've obviously negative 8 points from the first test match. Well, they lost 8 points from that. But to actually make it into the next cycle, they'd have to win a hell of a lot of games to get into the top two, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but we've only got the Kiwis at home. And
Sure. Yeah.
It feels to me like the answer is just play at home heaps, you know?
Yeah.
We were just saying earlier
just get your TV money.
England crap away. Decent at home, so just get home and you feel like it's a good team.
But they're not even decent at home, because they lost at home to New Zealand in that series. They lost 1-0 to them. They didn't technically lost to India yet.
They might draw that series.
I reckon they will, because I reckon you'll probably get, you know, you've got Ben Stokes back in the team, maybe Jofra Archer by the time India come back, you know, they'll probably level a series that they are.
India will have unearthed about three blokes before then as well.
Yeah. They kind of morally lost that. But I mean, the big statistical hope was that when England won here in 86, 87, they'd lost to New Zealand and India at home that summer.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and that was the team that can't bat, can't bowl, can't field.
Of course.
And I always look back to the mid-80s for just my guide.
Yeah.
What's this team going to do?
Yeah. So, so that wasn't, that's proven to be a completely false theory.
Right.
Ali, thanks so much for joining us. Very earnest, serious chat there. I mean, that just underscores the difficulty of this tour, that there's no jokes anymore. Will you stick with us for Ask TDC?
I'd be very happy to.
Okay, let's get into that. I'll just kick it off here, shall we?
Please.
Ask TDC, it's from Joey. Boys, got an Ask TDC for the Hignoramus and the Reverend Pesmant Tutu. One you've covered before, but still baffles me to this day. Firstly, a little bit of a backstory. So after a career in Tassie grade cricket that ended a few years back due to being self-diagnosed with being chronically mediocre, I had some time away from this game and actually somewhat enjoyed myself. Then as COVID hit, I found myself back in my hometown. After a few boring months and once things started clearing up, I got an offer from my old bush cricket club. That sounds scary.
Yeah.
To step back into the old side. I figured going into some shithole bar to drink 17 vodka Red Bulls and strike out with anything that resembles a female only really takes up my evenings. So I guess I'm free during the day. Why not? Seeing as though you haven't heard in the news that some Aldi version of Lewis Capaldi is tearing up the Tassie bush cricket scene, it'd be fair to say that I was consistent in my mediocrity, and I found I was once again asking myself, why on God's green earth do I put myself through this every Saturday? But even after being knocked out of last year's semi very comprehensively, and the season's end leaving a very poor taste in my mouth, much like the copious beverages and bummed cigarettes that ensue after an ordinary game of this shit, I found myself somewhat guilted into having another crack this season. This has become less of a question and more of a hypothesis, really. I put to you boys that the game itself is much like a toxic ex-partner, in that no matter how much you complain about how much you hate spending time with the game and how it always leaves you feeling like shit, and no matter how much your friends listen and tell you to end things, you're always so easily convinced by the captain or club president when they ask you at the end of season beers if you're going around again. Which is basically the amateur cricket equivalent of you up text from said ex. Similarly, when my mates ask me if I'm keen on beers on a Saturday, saying sorry boys got cricket gets the same reaction as sorry boys got to hang out with the missus. And of course, nothing is ever my fault, so why is cricket shit and how do I get rid of this chick? Regards, Joey.
It's an interesting one, Pez, in the context of the novel coronavirus that is circulating. I'm not sure if you caught this, but I've got a friend of mine who's still playing. I'm 35, same age as me. And just with the backlog of weddings, engagements, festivities of the season.
Auctions.
Exactly. Just going to them, not actually bidding.
Yeah, of course.
And now he's got a backlog, and now his entire weekends are caught up. But he's in Sydney, so the most part, like, the world is open for us in Sydney and Melbourne. So now his now fiance wants to go and celebrate the occasions of being able to go out in bars again. They want to go to weddings that they're only allowed, like, sort of 50 people, but they're invited to, and they get to travel again. They get to go to weddings. But he's got cricket on Saturday.
Mm.
So now he's caught up with, like, well, I've got to go to these things, and now the team has already lost a couple of games in the first part of the season. Might be, like, one or two wins before Christmas. And if you're on 6 points at Christmas, you can fucking put this season in the bin. It ain't getting any better. So now he's in this, like, vortex. He's played cricket his entire life, every Saturday. I play cricket. That's what I do, and I've got a deep-seated fear of change.
Mm.
So what does he do now? Can he come back after Christmas and take, you know, 15, 20 wickets of the season, maybe score 250 runs for the season, get the job done, come back next year, try and win a flag or whatever you win, a trophy?
The thing that stuck out to me, I mean, this is a classic one. This is foundational things.
Yeah.
But the thing that stuck out is that it's the toxic ex-partner or cricket that is bringing him back. Like, he attributes no responsibility to himself.
Yeah, that's very
for going
healthy.
Back to the game. Yeah. He's like, oh, no, the game got me back, and the game's toxic, so I'll abuse the game.
Yeah,
but I'll still turn up. I'll put my clothes on. I'll walk out with my kit and everything, and it's the game that's making me do it.
That's right.
You know, and he does say at the end that nothing is ever my fault.
Yeah, it's like never being out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is just some really basic shit, isn't it? I mean, he's obviously just, it's dad issues.
You know what's going to
happen? From early days.
Well, of course, what's going to happen, though, is going to hit that one perfect cover drive, et cetera, et cetera.
When does
that'll
it end?
That'll get him back.
Is it, let's say,
it never ends.
So he's going to be 70, just going, I'm just going to go around again.
Hey, Ali came out in 2002 and he's back.
Is this exclusively an Australian thing, do you think, Ali? Or do any of these themes resonate?
This illness.
Yeah, illness of the sickness. Game having you back.
It probably resonates. I mean, I managed to extricate myself at sort of, you know, early 20s. So, and I live a happy and fulsome life.
Yeah, isn't your
skin
life
looks
better?
Really good too.
Yeah, it looks good.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
So I don't know, check in somewhere for a month and then, you know, take
rehab. Grade cricket rehab.
You know what rehab is? Brunch on a Saturday. Waking up with a clear head, not having any anxiety from the night before. Going out and seeing your friends, going to the beach on Saturday, that's your rehab. Once you start, you do that like twice, and you're like, oh.
I think you need to go into an intensive
actually
rehabilitation.
Actually, go to rehab.
Yeah, like a 12-step.
12-step, yeah. Grade cricket.
Stop going to auctions.
I feel like we had a fake ad about that about 3 years ago. Yeah.
Mate, the amount of DMs we get from people like who just take photos of themselves at the beach being like, oh, life's better. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
I think you're right. I think we need to commence a grade cricket rehab program.
Is there any money in that for us? Is there a business in that for us?
Yeah.
Thomas Gill. Hey, boys. Got a good one for you that happened to me yesterday. Ooh, okay.
Okay. Well, it's pretty out there.
Big talk early. Yeah.
We'll be the deciders of that.
Exactly.
Thanks.
So, first of all, it's a Sunday game because round one got washed out. It was the reserve day. That's a foreign experience to me. Yeah. Have you known about this? Reserve days. If you get washed out on Saturday.
Reserve. I don't know. I'm already suspicious.
Mm.
Yeah. Rain's what you pray for. Why would you?
Exactly. What are we dancing for on Friday night?
Yeah. If I didn't experience that word in 2006 Sydney grade cricket, then I'm suspicious.
Exactly. What's bush cricket as well?
Yeah,
that was, a different question. Anyway, Thomas writes on. So we've played back-to-back games Saturday, Sunday. Couldn't think of a better way to spend my weekend shit sport. We've rolled these blokes for 140 and we get off to a nice start with our openers, but then have a mini collapse and all of a sudden I'm waking and walking out to the crease at 5 for 90. Need 50 to win and spinners are on each end. I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So me and the number 6 are cruising to victory and I'm knocking them around well on about 10, to 15, eyeing if the red ink to boost my average to the start of the season off with a flyer. Wouldn't mind a comma there, Tom.
Yeah, or a breath.
This Ollie Pope?
Popey.
Yeah. We're about 15 runs away from winning, still 5 down when this little leggy is about to bowl his last ball. I leave it with ease, and all I'm thinking about is the red ink. Start to walk down to my batting partner for the token mid-pitch chat in between overs, and as I leave my crease, I hear the keeper whip the bails off, and they start appealing.
Yes.
Here we go. This is some real shit. Square leg umpires give it not out. Then their captain fires up, knowing it could be their only chance to win a game this season, and says, and I quote, "The umpire hadn't called over yet." The square leg umpire confers with the main umpire, and they conclude over hadn't been called, and they give me out stumped. Fucked. I stand there and am baffled that this has just happened. I try to tell the opposition that this is fucked and they're all shit blokes, but I have to be on my way. Mm. Not only have I just paid $15 in umpires' money to be given out stumped after the over was clearly over, my illustrious red ink is gone and the average takes a massive hit. I'm fuming. As I'm walking off, I hear our scorer, who is also my dad, only reason I'm in the team, yell out, "Oh, get fucked!" He's fuming. Was a horrendous display of sportsmanship and the worst way I've ever gone out in my life. It's worse than a mancad, as I was fuming, no advantage at all. Horrified. We end up winning the game. Fuck them. Would love to hear some thoughts on this. Is it a fair game? Has this ever happened before? Being a keeper myself, would never think of doing this. Maybe I'll start now. Shit game. Why do I still play Tom? Tell you a story. Walking, man, champ. You're right. Off. You're fucking out. Man. Stay in your crease.
I mean, if you leave a ball to a leg spinner and you think it, like the ball clearly hasn't departed the keeper's hands, and you think now's a good time to have a chat mid wicket.
It might have had something interesting to say.
I mean, that's embarrassing. He deserves to be out. Sorry.
That's brutal.
Really? I mean, at no point am I thinking, like,
and he's not attempting a run.
And when he says, no, I don't care. When he says, I would never do this as a keeper, well, you're not a keeper. I mean, that is any keeper worth their salt will take any opportunity if somebody's leaving the crease to whip off the bails.
Yeah. Look at Josh Butler. Wasn't even keeping when he did it.
I'm disappointed also that his dad seemed to support him when he got out. Why isn't his dad giving it to him? There's a lot in I've got no sympathy for him.
Yeah,
in any way.
Yeah, it sounds like a product of poor parenting.
It does. Asking for sportsmanship, supportive parents. Everything about this is
What's
wrong.
He even doing there?
It's un-Australian.
This is un-Australian.
It's un-Australian.
Must be Melbourne because he said went out.
Yeah.
Oh, and then he said that as well.
Out. Are you aware of this phenomenon?
No.
Oh, it's a Melbourne thing apparently. I've never played down here, but Pez did, and they say went out.
I was playing 2010-11 St Kilda, and it was there's two things. It's you went out, and also instead of they say, how did you go out? Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did you go out? Like, as in what, on Saturday?
Yeah.
Like,
doesn't make any sense.
Like, you meant to say, oh, I was run out or something. How did you go out? Do you hear that anywhere else in the motherland?
No.
Yeah,
no, but I mean, you know, there's a lot of language that's used here. But, you know, I kind of roll my eyes at medicos, garbos, what the?
All right, settle down.
Yeah. Fuck off.
Worst way I've ever gone out in my life.
All right.
That'll do.
Ali, thank you so much for coming in and joining us.
Cheers, boys.
Appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for having me. That was a bit like stepping into Happy Gilmore's baseball cage and just taking a few on the chest.
Thought we were very tame.
Yeah. No, it's lovely. Thanks for having
365 days to the next hockey season.
That's right. You got tough enough.
We'll see you in 4 years.
Exactly. Nice one. Thanks one for out there, everyone listening. Merry Christmas to you and to yours.
And to yours.
Especially to yours, Pez.
Yep, and to those you possess.
Exactly, the things that you own and the people that you own. That's a weird
A couple of people in grey cricket possess things down in the basement, I think. Dolls and stuff.
My God.
We've all met someone like that.
Merry Christmas. See you on Boxing Day. Cheers.